fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Japan has reversed course and will now ban spectators from all Olympic events in and around Tokyo. The decision came as Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga announced Tokyo's fourth COVID-19 state of emergency 2 weeks ahead of the start of the Games. The AP's Charles de Ledesma reports.
Fans have been banned from the pandemic-postponed Tokyo Olympics following the issuing of a state of emergency. The move was announced by the International Olympic Committee and Japanese organisers, reducing the Games to a made-for-TV event. The new measures will clear venues around Tokyo, indoor and outdoor, of any fans at all. Suga says the emergency ruling would go into effect on Monday and last through August 22, which means the Olympics will be held entirely under emergency measures. I'm Charles Ledesma.
Thanks, Charles. Last month, Olympic organizers said they would allow some local spectators to attend events. They said attendance would be capped at 10,000, or 50% of a venue's capacity, but warned they might change course if coronavirus infections rose. And change course they have. The spectator ban will affect all sporting events taking place in Tokyo and in three neighboring prefectures. However, some Olympic events held in more distant regions of Japan, including early rounds of football, baseball, and softball competitions, will be subject to the 10,000 people 50% capacity cap.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Trigat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Paul Trigat won 2 Olympic silver medals for Kenya during his great running career. On Thursday, President Uhuru Kenyatta flagged off Kenya's first batch of athletes to travel to Japan.
I wish to each and every one of you success as you head to Tokyo. And we all look forward to welcoming you back home and celebrate your wins at the 2020 Olympics.
The ceremony at State House in Nairobi included members of Kenya's women's volleyball team, as well as the men's and women's rugby teams. Team Kenya, though, is in all of its Olympic medals in athletics, a sport in which it has been a world powerhouse over the years. The Kenyans were the top-performing African team at the 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. They won 13 medals, including 6 gold, and all of the medals came in athletics. Joining us now with more Olympic news is Samson Omale. Sporty Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you, Sunny. Preparations by various African countries ahead of the Tokyo Olympics is at their final stages, with several athletes from Africa already arriving in Tokyo. The Games, which is scheduled to formally open in 14 days, is going ahead despite rising cases of COVID-19 in Japan. Joshua Kipruto Cheptegei is a Ugandan long-distance runner and the 10th man in history to hold the 5,000 and 10,000 meters world record concurrently, both set in 2020. Joshua Cheptegei says his desire is to become a double Olympic winner in both events.
It's my dream and my ambition to become the Olympic champion. It is backed by my own self-motivation and ambition of becoming the greatest distance athlete of all time. So that means I don't have to show it only once, but I have to show it consistently in different fields and, of course, sustaining it for many years to come.
Into West Africa, where the second batch of Nigerian athletes to the Tokyo 2020 Olympics will depart Nigeria on July 13th. Nigeria will be competing in 9 sports at the rescheduled Tokyo Olympics scheduled for July 23rd to August the 8th. Nigeria's Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Mr. Sunday Dare, while addressing a group of athletes camping in Bayelsa State on Thursday, described as impressive the preparations of Nigerian wrestlers to the Tokyo Games.
I followed the effort they've made in the last 2 years. We've sent them to so many championships around the world. We've seen them excel. I can tell you very clearly, these young wrestlers, about 5 of them, are ready to take on the world in Tokyo, Japan.
Elsewhere in Ghana, experienced Ghanaian triple jumper Nadia Ike is expected to be the flag bearer of Team Ghana at the opening ceremony of the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games. According to the administrative manager of the Ghana Olympic Committee, Ms. Farida Idris, the top athlete will lead Ghana as they display their rich culture in Japan on July 13th. Ghana's Minister of Youth and Sports, Mustafa Usif, says the government has pulled up all the stops to ensure that Team Ghana returned with medals from the 2020 Summer Olympic Games in Japan.
And I have the assurance that the team is going to do well. We put all the necessary preparation together, and that's why currently they are there on the pre-games training. And the main tournament, we are the preparation that even when they were in camp, the boxing team, I visited them just to motivate them, to encourage them, everything that is needed to ensure that they participate and win medals.
That's Mustafa Usif, Ghana's Minister of Youth and Sports. And thanks to Samson Omale for that report. Samson will have more African sports news later in the show.
My name is Shaku Samed, junior brother of Basi Samed Sasame, a light heavyweight at the Ghana national team and an Olympic qualifier. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Peter Clote, the host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. This is one of the stories we will be covering on Nightline Africa. A son of jailed former South African president Jacob Zuma says he doesn't have confidence in the country's judicial system. We'll have details. Tune in, you'll be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Sporty greetings, everyone. This is Ambassador Mary Onyale, Olympic medalist, 5-time African champion in the sprint event. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Mary Onyale competed for Team Nigeria at 5 Olympics, and Mary won 2 bronze medals, one at the 1992 Barcelona Games and the other at the 1996 Atlanta Olympics. To find out more about Team Nigeria's representation in athletics at the upcoming Tokyo Games, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted the editor of the Lagos-based complete sports newspaper, Dare Esan.
We have 14 athletes that have qualified for the Olympics, and they'll be competing in 13 events, individual events, and 2 relay events, making 15 events overall. Most of the athletes qualified in the sprint, and we have a few in the field events. For the women, we have 10 athletes that qualified in the individual events. Blessing Okagbare in the 100 meters, 200 meters. Grace Nwokocha in the 100 meters, 200 meters. Rosemary Chukuma in the 100 meters. Patience Okon-George in the 400 meters. Favour Ofili in the 200 meters. Ruthu Soro in the triple jump and long jump, although she's competing only in the long triple jump. We also have Eze Brume, where some people are already calling her the Golden Girl. She'll be competing in the long jump. Remember, she won a bronze medal 2 years ago at the World Championship in Doha. Then we also have Chioma Onyekure in the discus throw. And of course, the new girl. She's competing for Nigeria for the first time. Annette Echikunwonke, she's competing in the hammer. And if you would like to know, the hammer, we have competing in the hammer for the first time at the Olympics ever. So this is the first time Nigeria will be presenting an athlete competing in the hammer throw at the Olympics. Even in the discus for women, yes, it's new.
Which platforms or events did these athletes use to qualify for the Tokyo Games?
And most of the athletes qualified by meeting the entry standard. I think only three of them, yes, Chioma Onyekwere in the discus, Patience Okon-George in the 400 meters, and Rosemary Chukwuma in the 100 meters. They qualify via their world rankings. So we have, that's for the women. Then for the men, we have only four athletes that qualified automatically. Actually five, but one has to drop out because we had four in the 400, in the 100 meters. And you know the rule says only three can be presented. So we have Divine Odudoro in the 100 and 200 meters. We have Isolisha Shekiri in the 100 meters. And of course, the new king of speed in Nigeria, Ina Okadegoke, in the 100 meters.
Can you tell Sunnyside of Sports listeners the events Nigerian track and field athletes failed to qualify?
If you're talking about events that we didn't qualify, there are so many events. Like I told you earlier, we are going to compete in the Hamas for the first time. So most of those field events, we've never really been there. Okay, we've been there in the short put because Chukwuebuka Enekwechi is in the short put for us. But in the others, discus, I'm not too sure. But certainly Hamas we've not. Triple jump, where we should have competed, I think that was when they boycotted the 1976 Montreal Olympics. I think in the long jump, yes, we have. The Yusuf Ali of this world even made it to the final, even in the 400 meters hurdles. But those seems like things that happened donkey years ago, because I can't remember the last time we qualified in the 400 meters hurdles. So there are a lot of events that we didn't qualify to participate in. But I want to just maybe concentrate on the relays. The 4x1 men, we actually ranked 17th. The 4x4 women, we were ranked 17th up till the deadline day, where we dropped to, I think, 19th or 20th. Then the 4x4 men, that was an impossible task, really. Then for the events we are competing in, like I said, we have the 100 meters, 200 meters, 400 meters for men. We have the short put for men, just those for men. Then for the women, we have the 100 meters, 200 meters, 400 meters, triple jump, long jump, hammer throw, discus throw. So I think it's a good one for us. And talking about where we will likely get medals, if you remember, I said people are already calling her the golden girl, and that's Issa Bruma in the long jump. Yeah, 2 years ago. Oh, let me start from our Olympic debut in 2016 in Rio. An home-based athlete, she jumped 6'8" to qualify. And she went to Rio to make the final and actually placed 5th. And since then, she's been growing in leaps and bounds. And it was evident 2 years ago when he made the final and she was 3rd. And this year, she's the world leader going to the Olympics. Remember, at the end of May in the USA, she jumped 7'17". That's a new African record, actually breaking Chioma Adunwa's 7.12 meters record. That's the record that she made to win the Olympic gold in 1996. Issa Bruma has broken it, and she's the best in the world as we are talking. And many Nigerians are praying and hoping that she remains the best. And you know what that means. That's a gold medal. Then there are a lot of 50-50 athletes with 50-50 chances. Toby Amushon, if you remember 2 years ago, she was 4th in the 100 meters hurdles at the World Championship. And she's been in great form, really great form this year. So she has a 50-50 chance of making the podium. Blake Agbari has been in fantastic form. Forget about the win that denied her the 10-6-3 record that she could have set at the national trials. But she's in great form. And certainly she will be returning to the finals of the event. Because the last time she made a global final in the 100 or 200 meters was in 2015 at the World Championship in Beijing. Since then, she was a semi-finalist in Rio. She was a semi-finalist in 2017 at the World Championship. Then last 2 years ago, she was also a semi-finalist in the sprint event, that's the 200. So this time, I think she's going to get to the final. We are winning a medal, will be the only focus. And I think that's just about our chances. And I want to believe that the chances are bright, especially with the women. And like I said, they've always been building on us. Who says we can't get a gold medal again? I think this is the time for us to get a gold medal through Issa Bruma. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dare. That's Dare Esson, the editor of the Lagos-based Complete Sports Newspaper. And thanks also to Iron Mike Mbonye. Dare spoke with Iron Mike on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Hi, my name is Julius Diego, former world javelin champion and Olympic silver medalist. And you are listening to the Sunnyside of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, it's the Africa edition. What's the latest on the ceasefire in the Tigray region of Ethiopia? Can the government in Addis Ababa and the Tigray Defense Forces reach a compromise, or will conflict continue? We talked with two regional experts about the situation in Ethiopia and democratic backsliding in Nigeria and elsewhere. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Carol. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Samson Omale joins us once again with more African sports news. And Samson says he'll be kicking off with African club football and Saturday's CAF Confederation Cup final.
Morocco's Raja Club Athletic will face Algeria's JS Kabylie on Saturday at the Stade du Almite General Mathieu Kérékou in Cotonou, Benin Republic. This will be the first encounter between Raja Casablanca and JS Kabylie in the CAF Confederation's Cup. The Algerian team have never won against Moroccan opposition in the competition, having drawn twice and lost twice, failing to score in each of these four encounters. Raja Casablanca, on the other hand, will play their second CAF Confederations Cup final after 2018, when they won against AS Vita Club, becoming the sixth team to reach this stage of the competition multiple times since it began in 2004 after CS Faxien, Etoile du Sahel, TP Mazembe, FAR Rabat and RS Bakane. Pam Dole and Ferdinand Ubum are both radio football analysts. In our preview of Saturday's CAF Confederations Cup final, I wanted to find out from them what sort of finals should we expect from both teams.
Undoubtedly, when you talk about African football, you must see the impact that the North African teams are bringing into the continent, especially club football. With these two North African sides coming together to clash for the coveted trophy of the CAF Confederations Cup, you expect firepower from these two sides. Of course, Raja Casablanca from Morocco and JS Kabylie of Algeria are home. Yes, sides you cannot say are strangers to this level of football. But I want to give it to JS Kabylie. If you look at the way they got to the final, it came in a crushing fashion, defeating their Cameroonian counterpart by 5-2 on aggregate. I hope I got that right. All right, but then for Raja, they scaled through narrowly via the penalty shootout. So I want to give it to JS Kabylie as the side I see as having the prospect of emerging victorious at the end of the day.
Raja Casablanca versus JS Kabylie. Not Africa has it all when it comes to club football on the African continent. The most delightful brand of football at club level is played in North Africa. Great team, great brand of football from both sides. So, and I believe that the fans will never be disappointed, and the world too will not be disappointed, because it's going to be a very decent presentation of African football that we are expecting to watch tomorrow in Benin Republic.
Staying with football news, it was day three of action on Thursday at the Southern African Regional Showpiece Tournament, the COSAFA Cup, holding at the Nelson Mandela Bay in South Africa. Chipolopolo of Zambia made an embarrassing start to their COSAFA Cup title defense with a 2-1 loss to Lesotho. Fielding Zambia's strongest lineup at the COSAFA Cup since 2007, coach Milutin Michu Seredojevic's side dominated the first half but couldn't win after the end of 90 minutes.
I believe that we have dropped in situation. Instead of barring the game in our favor and scoring on 1-0, the Gampani had that situation, clear cut, open goal. We have missed that, and football is usually the game that gives you chance. If you don't use your chance on the other side, you will get punished.
Host South Africa grabbed a 1-0 victory over the 10 men of Eswatini to head the pool with a full haul of 6 points from their two games. The action continues in Group B on Friday, when West African guest nation at the tournament, Senegal, will be back on the pitch and hoping to make up for their opening game loss to Namibia. Senegal will square up against Mozambique, who played to a 0-0 draw with Zimbabwe in their first game, while Malawi will take on Zimbabwe. The two top teams in each of the groups advance to the semifinals, which will be played on July 16th. And on to some summer football transfer news, where Moroccan international Achraf Hakimi is finally a player of Paris Saint-Germain. The 22-year-old right-back, who has committed until June 2026, saw PSG paying €71 million, including bonuses, to acquire the services of the North African, which makes him the most expensive player of this summer transfer window. And on to basketball news, the FIBA Women's AfroBasket 2021 Zone 5 qualifiers is set to hold from Monday, June 12th to Saturday, 17th of July at the Kigali Arena in the Rwandan capital. Five nations, including host Rwanda, Egypt, Kenya, Debutant, South Sudan, and Uganda, are all in search for the FIBA AfroBasket Championship ticket. The winner of this tournament will qualify for the FIBA Women's AfroBasket 2021, set for September 17th to the 26th at the Multipurpose Sports Complex in Yaoundé, Cameroon. Dubai-based Rose Ouma, team captain of Kenya Lionesses, is exuding confidence ahead of the qualifiers.
I believe we're up to task. We've been training for quite a while now, and the government has put us in camp for the first week or so. We've given it our best, and we hope that our preparation is good enough to help us clinch the lone title to represent in the upcoming AfroBasket.
That's Rose Ouma, the captain of Kenya's national women's basketball team. And thanks to Samson Omale for that report. In more basketball news, the Phoenix Suns beat the visiting Milwaukee Bucks Thursday night 118-108 to take a 2-0 lead in the NBA Finals. The AP's George Tanner reports from the western U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona.
Devin Booker led the way with 31 points, including 7 3-pointers. The Suns bounced back from a 9-point first-quarter deficit to defeat the Bucks 118-108 and take the first 2 games of the NBA Finals. Booker says a big play was a 10-pass sequence that he and everybody on the floor was involved in.
You know, when you're playing like that, you know, it's fun. It's fun. Everybody's touching it. You feel the energy of the ball when you get it. You know, you want to make a play for somebody else, and something opens up always when, you know, it's popping and moving like that.
Mikal Bridges had a career playoff high 27 for the Suns. Giannis Antetokounmpo had a game high 42 for the Bucks, including 20 in the third quarter. George Tanner, Phoenix.
Thanks, George. The NBA Finals now move to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where Game 3 of the Best of 7 Championship Series will be played Sunday night. Phoenix's head coach, Monty Williams, gave credit to his team's defense in Game 2.
I like the fact that our guys just stayed the course and showed poise, and we were down 3. And then in the second quarter, which I felt like won the game for us, our defense was at a high, high level. We held those guys to 16 points. And so that ended up being the difference. You know, obviously you have to do more in the second half, but the second quarter defense was tremendous.
Meanwhile, Bucks star Giannis Antetokounmpo says his team has faced deficits before in the playoffs and will now try to regroup ahead of Game 3 on Sunday night.
Going back to Milwaukee, you know, we've been here before. We know what the deal is. Just got to be aggressive, keep enjoying, you know, playing together, keep enjoying playing basketball. And hopefully our good habits, you know, throughout the year can, you know, take over, and now we can put ourselves in a position to win the game. But we know what the deal is.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the latest top stories of the week, including American troops left their main military base in Afghanistan, marking a symbolic end to the longest war in U.S. history. Listen to Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Kim. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. England will host Italy Sunday in the European Football Championship final. Some health experts are worried the match could fuel the spread of the coronavirus. VOA's Gwen Ooten reports on the warning coming out of the UK. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Sunday's European Championship final will take place at London's Wembley Stadium, the site where two semifinal matches were played in front of more than 60,000 fans. But as celebrations continue across the UK, a new circulation of the highly contagious Delta variant has many health experts concerned. And immunologist Dennis Kinane tells Reuters News he's worried the ongoing festivities could further spread the virus.
So I think that we should be doing more. We should be refraining from hugging as much as we're doing. I can understand it. I can understand the whole emotion of it. And also, I think that it would have been nicer if a lot of the fans that we saw coming back from the game, etc., were donning their masks. I saw some of them with their masks around their necks. They were obviously thinking about it. But it would have been nicer if we just gripped it as a nation and said, we're still in this pandemic. Let's just keep doing what we can do to be sensible.
Wembley Stadium is part of a research program that allows people who have been fully vaccinated to return to sports venues in large numbers during the pandemic. But Kinane says these so-called pilot events will do little to control COVID-19.
I can understand it completely. I can understand the occasion. And I think this is quite human of us to actually get involved in this. And it was a fantastic event. And I think it's good for people. It's good for society to have these events. But at the same time, I think we lost an opportunity. I think we lost an opportunity because I think it should have been more obvious. I mean, I think what the teams should have done should have actually been to social distance and to do something a little bit more than they did. I mean, essentially, they just, they're living in this bubble. They're comfortable with that. They're hugging, they're talking, they're doing all these things. We understand that. And we understand that they can do this because they're tested and they're, by and large, free of COVID within those bubbles. But it's the perception outside that is a problem. And I think we still have problems with these populations, particularly this population is less immunized than other populations, transmitting the virus. And they're transmitting it back to their families, they're transmitting it to other people. We have a social responsibility, and the football teams have also.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson reiterated that message of responsibility ahead of last Wednesday's semi-final between England and Denmark. The Prime Minister has delayed a full reopening in the UK until a week after this Sunday's final. But English fans will be able to gather inside bars and pubs with no restrictions. And Suffolk University professor Keith Still warns fan zones could become super spreader events.
The stadiums are being correctly managed for sure. The unfortunate thing is, of course, it's all of these fan zones where we see vast celebrations, large crowds hugging each other, screaming each other. So that's the scary thing, is all of the stadiums are being managed. The fact that we've got a whole nation now celebrating, and rightly so, it's scary because these fan zone areas are not regulated in the same way. They do involve large crowds gathering and celebrating.
The World Health Organization has also stressed the importance of looking beyond stadiums into indoor spaces where people gather during and after matches. But with England entering their first major final in 55 years, Keith Still points out celebrations will be tough to rein in.
That really is the worry, though, the celebratory crowds not necessarily taking the same sort of precautions. We're not out of the COVID lockdown yet. We're still under government guidance and legislation for mask wearing in places of public assembly until the 19th of July. But try telling that to somebody that's celebrating that England's through to the finals. You've got a problem in terms of crowd management on your hands there.
Italy has also begun to see an uptick in COVID-19 cases. And just as in the UK, epidemiologists in Italy are concerned the Euro 2020 tournament could help to fuel the virus. Italy's health undersecretary has urged all football fans in the country who gather to watch the final to please wear a mask. The UEFA Euro 2020 championship match between Italy and England will take place on Sunday at Wembley Stadium in London. And that is all from me for today and for the week. I'll hand it back over to you, Sonny. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
And that wraps up the July 9th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports!
I get it.